Welcome to Brains, Bibles, and Beyond, where we discuss theology and worldview apologetics. I'm Nate Day with Think Like Christ Ministries, and I'm here with our resident theologian Joel Willoughby with Brains and Bibles.
If you would like more information about our ministries, check out our websites, brainsandbibles.com and thinklikechrist.org. And on whatever platform you are using, please like, share, subscribe, do whatever else you know you should do to help us out.
If you have any questions, send them to podcast@thinklikechrist.org.
And all you budding theologians out there, go grab your favorite theological coffee receptacle and enjoy this episode.
Hey everybody, today we have a very special episode. At some point in the past, Joel had the opportunity to interview an individual who has been helping out refugees from other countries. Mm-hmm. And this individual, we have to protect his identity, first of all, because if he is found out, he would be in danger. Yeah. But he has the opportunity to share the gospel with refugees who come to areas around him. And then once they accept the gospel and accept Jesus, then he helps protect them and hide them and ministers to them. Anyway, it's a great interview. I think everyone will enjoy it. It's a very interesting story, first of all. But second of all, lots of good practical advice for just sharing the gospel in general.
Yeah, right.
As well as good practical advice and things to do for each of us to be involved even in the same ministry. But also to just how to act and treat people from other cultures that we may not be used to. You know, how we can think outside the box a little bit to relate to people and show people love that may not be from around here or be like us or maybe think differently. So yeah. Anyway, it's some great practical advice, and I hope you guys all enjoy it. You got anything to add to that, Joel?
Yeah, we need to share the gospel. And we need to continually learn how to do it better. And yeah. That's what a lot of this video addresses. So,
and that's kind of the main point of this.
Yep.
So.
Yep. All right, let's get to it.
All right.
Hello there. This is Brains, Bibles, and Beyond as normal, except it's a very special edition here, a little bit of an underground mission. I really like this. Joel Willoughby here. My partner, Nate Day, is not able to join us. We are off of our normal location, but I will not be talking about where we are, when we are, or many other things. I have a friend that's joined me here that is specifically very intentionally off camera, and my friend has a special mission, and we're going to be talking about that to reach the wonderful people of Afghanistan. And so, my friend, why don't you just give a basic introduction here of just what it's all like as much as you can, and we're going to go to there and kind of address some issues of evangelism and worldview and culture and things like that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we work here stateside, so it's kind of a unique opportunity. We work with what are considered by many people unreached or frontier unreached people groups who now are here in the United States living in our own context. So it is missionally kind of a unique situation. So rather than being the ones who have to learn another culture, which of course we do have to learn other cultures in this, but we get to still operate, kind of swim in our own pool, you know, that we were born in. But it also, it makes a really unique situation where we are actually the ones now hosting. So we are the ones in the host country now. The host country is our country. And so that changes the nature of evangelism and opportunity in some really interesting ways. So we work here in the States with lots of refugee communities from unreached people groups.
That's really awesome. And so not just the people of Afghanistan, but even more than that. Mm-hmm. Okay. What other countries, could you mention that? What other countries may you be helping the citizens of?
Yeah. So we reach out to people from Iraq, Somalia, Syria, Congo, Central African Republic, a number of different places. Mm. So we have a very wide range of people in our community that we're able to reach with the gospel, and some who are believers who came from those parts of the world and were under heavy persecution for a long time, and we also have the privilege of helping them, loving on them, and being a welcoming community for many of our brothers and sisters who have either had to live underground or live under constant threat. So it's a really interesting situation.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's awesome. I'm glad you're doing it, and I know there's others. There needs to be more, and so kind of a cool thing. And if someone was interested in this, because there's a lot of information that we can't give out about you and things, and so if someone was interested in this kind of thing as we were talking, what route could they take to actually begin to minister like this?
Yeah, so there's a couple routes. It depends on where your community is located. So there are hundreds of cities actually around the U.S. that are host to large communities of refugees. So I would recommend just get to know your city. So kind of get out, see, hey, whether it's a resettlement agency or just the city, your city will know if it has people from other nations in it. And so just asking sometimes, like, hey, who's here and how can I help? Because a lot of people are very underfunded. It's very hard. You know, you'll have maybe a resettlement agency who every one of their caseworkers is responsible now for 50 families. You know, even if they spend an hour a week helping each family, they still can't make it in a 40-hour work week to meet everyone even just for an hour a week. So a lot of these people are incredibly overwhelmed. And so it offers the body of Christ a really unique opportunity to come alongside these people and just say, hey, how can we, you know, can our church, can our community group, whatever you want to, you know, whatever you're doing, can we adopt a family?
That's good.
And support that family. And not only does it help you to have a one-on-one relationship now with people from an unreached people group, again, right here in your own backyard, and you get to be missionaries to these people without having to fly across the world, without having to, you know, raise all those huge initial funds for startup fees and outfit and passage. You get to do it for the price of gas and dinner, you know. But so That's not awesome. Only do you get to build that relationship, and through those, you're able to eventually share Christ, sometimes even just right away. But also, you are also, as Christians, showing these places in your community, we're the body of Christ and we're here. And we want to love and help and support. And it builds a lot of good relationships and really helps to proclaim Christ's name in the public.
That's good. I wonder even if you could say something to, is there maybe a some sort of a ministry or missions board or something that someone could reach out to get more information?
Yeah, man, I'm trying to think of a specific missions board. Probably the closest thing I would say would be World Relief is a Christian-run refugee resettlement agency all across the United States.
Okay.
See if you have a World Relief within your, you know, your circle of, you know, your city or something we're close. And even if you don't, if you reach out to them, they would probably love to help you find out how you can get involved.
Okay.
So World Relief's a great one. There's a couple more. I can't remember their names off the top of my head. I'll try to maybe try to put them in the comments or something if I can find them later.
Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah, we can figure that out. So, you know, you've shared a bit about the nature of what you do. Really, I'm on a just exploring because of some of the work I'm doing and things. About methods of evangelism. That's what I really like to push here. And it has to do a lot with worldview. And if you know, most of my audience here, they're pretty regular with understanding worldview and things because I've talked about it. But not everyone is. The idea with worldview, for everyone's sake, is just you know, this is how you essentially see the world, people, life problems, how you think about space, land, time. Everything. So it's not just simply faith. It's actually has a lot to do with culture and even just when in history you've been born, different parts of the world, all sorts of things. The language that you you know you grew up speaking, your heart language, if you will, and just all the experiences you've had. It all tints the lens that you view the world through. So when we're thinking about that, sometimes I think methods of evangelism even kind of switch up a little bit because of that sort of idea. So I'd just like you to speak a little bit about what sort of methods of evangelism may really not work, and be specific to the context you're referring to, and then after that, what does work?
Yeah. So in the context of reaching refugees in the United States, it, like you said, it has to do with all those the worldview has to do with all those cultural aspects. And so one of the hard things with that is, depending on the worldview of the refugees, it can radically, you know, radically alter. So even people from the same nation. So that's where, you know, like in the United States, for example, if I want to evangelize to someone in the Bible Belt, or I want to evangelize to someone in the East Coast, or the Pacific Northwest, or California, it's one nation, but wow. All four of those cultures are radically different. Yeah. And the same thing is true of other nations. And so part of one thing with that I recommend is, if people want to get involved, you know, you don't have to overkill or anything, but just do a little bit of research and make it fun. You're trying to make it fun. Like, hey, you know, I'm going to do a little study on this people group or this country.
Yeah.
Joshua Project also has a lot of really good information, because what you'll see, you know, if you just to take Afghanistan, for example, if you go to the Joshua Project and you hit Afghanistan down below, you're suddenly going to realize there's like 40 different people groups. It's like, oh, hold on, wait a minute. So even within Afghanistan, some people groups are actually still fairly animistic in some of the rural areas. And then you'll also have, even within Islam, you'll have Shia predominant groups, Sunni predominant groups. Culturally, you'll have Persian people, you'll have Pashto people, and all of those, it's just this matrix of different people who, even though it's the same nation, see the world differently. They see, you know, the end goal of life differently. They see, all these things are radically different. So sometimes it's really helpful to just take a little time and be like, hey, you know what? Yeah. I want to find out, how can I reach these people? But just for example, within my context, I'll just do research on that people group and pray. That's another huge component, you know, is like, Lord,
right, absolutely,
help me to know. Because even within a worldview framework, you still have, you know, it's almost like continuing, you know, fingers going out. You have individuals within that worldview that are either accepting it or are trying to reject it, but don't know what else to accept. And so it just having that, I try to like just that realizing it's dynamic.
Yes.
You know, every relationship's going to be dynamic. But yeah, just doing good research, seeking the Lord's wisdom, and then jumping in with it. So
jumping in.
Yeah.
So what would you say about, let's see here. We have lots of different ideas about what works best. Now, what I like to say is, we only have so much time, energy, money. There's only so many resources that we have. There's a lot of things that can work. Ideally, number one, what would you say is the very best thing you could possibly do to reach people, maybe in general, or if you want to be specific to a culture, go ahead.
Yeah, so kind of, I would say probably to any refugee culture, because it is that very much, you know, and even East-West is oversimplified, but it really is this a huge difference in how they view time, relationships, honor, shame, all that, is hospitality. Hospitality with an upfrontness, not in a confrontational way, but an openness of who you are. Like, I want to have a meal with you. You know, I want to welcome you into my city, and stuff. And I want to be your friend. And not hide, you know, and you don't have to hide that you're a Christian. You know, that's one of the unique opportunities we have of welcoming people into our nation.
Yeah.
Is we get to just say, dude, we're from, and even if it's informal, they notice, and they, you know, hey man, I'm from, you know, this church down the street, whatever, and we want to welcome you to our city. Oh my goodness, how many times just simple things like that, they open all kinds of conversations. And it might not even open it right away, but one of the things that it does is over time, and again, it could be a day, a week, a month, you know, whatever, But that consistent presence of being there for people, and they know you're a believer, there's an incredible number of people who come to this country, and they really are very curious about Jesus, curious about the truth, but they don't even know who to ask. You know, and so in a sense, you just, you know, you let them, you're just playing a dance with people, you know, and you're letting them lead sometimes, and they're like, hey, you know, and they'll ask a question, and it's like, bam, right there. And you just jump into it. Because sometimes it's driven by curiosity. Sometimes it's driven by a huge hunger. Sometimes it's just, it's just even curiosity. But they'll open that door, and just having that hospitality means a world of difference. So especially in our context that's ever been ever secularizing, one thing a lot of people from other nations notice is, wow, America's not the place I was told it was. Mm. This is not it's not very open. It's not very hospitable. Everyone just like, they get in their car in their garage, they drive out, they drive back in their garage and close. I haven't even seen my neighbor, you know, I don't even know if they're real, you know, like maybe they're just a bunch of robots. You almost get this like brain in a vat American style thing. Like maybe it's not even real. But then when they see Christians acting differently, and they see Christians opening their homes, coming over. And so with that hospitality,
They notice these things.
Is the other big thing too is allow people to serve you. And it might sound kind of weird to say it like that, but a lot of people who come here from other cultures, hospitality is a big deal to them. And that's one of the ways that they're able to love, they're able to serve. And so for many of these people who say they've lived in a refugee camp for years, that has, for many of them, been an integral part of their culture that's been stripped away for a significant amount of time. And so we have to be able to like humble ourselves to receive things from them, because it's actually a huge blessing to many people. Okay. And of course, there's an outlier here or there, but overwhelmingly, they're like, no, I seriously want to cook you my food. And you're like, oh, I don't even have to cook dinner. You know, like, well, let me bring the groceries. And they'll be like, how dare you? You know, like, no, like, I want to serve you. I want to show you my culture. Man, those opened up some of the most amazing conversations and relationships.
Would you, in that kind of a context, would you even say something like, well, is there anything I can bring? Or would you just totally cut that out and not even bring that up?
Yeah, I would. You just not even bring it.
This is a very American thing to say, you know.
Yeah,
we're very individualistic. It's very much of, you know, well, how can I help you? Never about receiving. So
exactly,
that's important.
The one thing I would say to that though is this is where it also gets kind of fun sometimes, is being like, hey, how about I'll go to your house, you cook me, you know, something, we'll share a meal, we'll drink a bunch of tea. And then would it be okay to invite you to my house at some point too? And again, if they say no, great. You know, because a lot of times people are dealing through lots of trauma. And so just being gracious and realizing, hey, they might not be ready for that, but they might be. And then they get to come to your house. You get to share with them something of your culture. And it just, again, builds that back and forth of relationship building.
I like that.
And that comfortability of, because for a lot of people who come from other countries too, especially the refugee route, many times they're here because of political, religious, or economic or social persecution, to the point where even the UN says, yeah, you can't live in your own country or you'll die. You know, and so realizing that a lot of times there are trust issues, you know, because
major turmoil has happened.
Yeah, major turmoil has happened. It was my own brother who betrayed me, or this or that. And so just having grace and patience and being like, hey guys, like, that's where really I think Christ's words about unconditional love come in so strong, where it's one of the most beautiful concrete ways that you can manifest unconditional love is love without timelines. When you can say, I'm gonna love you, and even if we never get here, that's great, I'm still gonna love you because you're made in the image of God, and now I've been given this amazing chance to welcome you to my community. But even if it's like, you know, we like, oh man, I gotta seal the deal. You know, God's the, you know, God's the used car salesman manager who's like, all right, like, you better sell that Nissan or I'm right, gonna right. be mad. You know, you just being able to release that and be like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna love this person. I'm gonna let them know. You know, they're gonna know I'm a Christian.
Yes.
And then you just do that. You just mm-hmm. do that dance. So
I think it's absolutely wonderful advice for any cultural context.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of that. A lot of what you said is. The big things, key words I've kind of picked up on here is definitely relationship, really two-way hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give it, but you have to make sure you're receiving it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of, you know, and of course, you know, you don't bring it up. Hey, why don't you have me?
Yeah.
but allow it when it happens and stuff. Yeah, relationship, hospitality, and just serving, just, you know, that being there kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think you've mentioned before, too, another time, there's a lot of people that are just, they want an American friend.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work with refugees in the States for on and off about 13 years now. So quite a while. And consistently when me or other people I work with, when we ask people, what's the one thing, you know, what's something that's hard for you? However we ask that question, there's a million things. It's like, well, I'm worried about my family who's still overseas. I'm worried
Absolutely.
About this, worried about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But consistently, one of the biggest things is I just don't have an American friend.
Wow.
You know, I've lived here for 3 years. I've never been in an American's home, you know, or I don't have anyone, you know, maybe even I have a job. I work at this place. No one even talks to me, you know? And so
right.
a lot of them are very hungry just for relationships and just to have someone to talk to, you know, someone
sure.
who will listen, you know. You know, I say one of the other things too is, you know, realizing like, yeah, it's okay to just listen sometimes, you know.
Sure, yes.
And yeah, it's a huge one.
I've often thought, you know, and I love this ministry you're doing, and one of the things I thought even before having known you and things is that, you know, in America, we have kind of a unique opportunity in that there are people from all around the world coming here, and even many of what we would call the unreached people groups. And you've already mentioned the Joshua Project, and I'm familiar with them. And you could go to their website, anybody out there, and they'll give you all sorts of information. They'll tell you what they mean by unreached people group. They use words like Christian adherent and evangelical, and they'll define those terms. You can find that, and that really helps you understand the statistics that they're giving you, which is really important, actually. And so what I find really important is you have these people that you would probably, I mean, most people would never have the opportunity to actually share the gospel with any of these people, or even show the love of Christ to any of these people, except that they are coming to this country and maybe even in your own backyard. And they are learning this language, your language, as a, you know, the normal American, learning your language, learning your culture. And so that makes it a whole lot easier. To share with these people. And it's really sad that it's just this totally untapped market. I mean, not totally, but largely untapped market, so to speak. And I don't mean market in the sense of a business sense. I really don't mean it that way. But I think my normal listeners understand what I'm saying here. Would you like to speak to that a little bit? Just how, I think you already have a little bit, so I don't want to be repetitious or anything, but anything else?
Yeah. I do. I think it's, I mean, some of it too is just underexposure to just not even knowing the opportunity that exists. You know, in my community, I lived there for so many years. You know, I was actually in university before I even realized the opportunity that I had. You know, it wasn't until I did a learning project for one of my linguistics classes.
Mm.
And I went to this place and it just blew my mind. It was like, whoa, wait a minute. There are people from every inhabitable continent right here. And immediately just picking up on like, wait, I could go overseas and reach people from this group or this group or this group, from Asia to Africa to the Middle East to wherever. Hold on, they're here? You know, like,
yeah.
Wait, like just these 20 people? It was like, no. There's thousands of these people. I'd lived here for years and I never even, I would drive past apartment complexes having no idea that there were 200, 300 people that I would later on read about, you know, as like,
yes.
Yeah, like you can, you know, go to this nation, which great, go, you know, like go,
it's
but
nuts.
Realize wow, the amazing opportunity we have right now. Sometimes it's just, you just got to learn. You just got to learn about the opportunity. And then just, as someone once said, like, just show up. So much of it is just showing up. Even if you're like, I don't know how to do this kind of, cross-cultural, whatever, it's intimidating. Seriously, you just show up. And man, it's pray, show up, and it's amazing what God does.
Pray before, during, and after. That's what I
Yep.
always say. Pray before, during, and after.
Exactly.
You'll need some 10-minute prayer.
Yeah.
You think about Nehemiah going to the king, right? 2 seconds, basically, Lord help me.
Yeah.
And he talks to the king.
Exactly. And the prayer also sometimes offers some unique situations too. Just to share a quick story.
Yeah, go ahead.
A friend of mine is from a Muslim country, and he was asking me the one time, it was one of the first times I was over at his house, and time came to do his daily prayers and stuff, and he was kind of like really like awkward about it, because he was like, I don't know what to expect from this guy, because now there's an American in my home, like I don't even know what to expect, and he's just kind of like, he's looking at his watch, I got this like prayer thing that I do, and I was like, yeah, that's cool. He was like, so I'm just gonna be in my living room, okay? I was like, yeah. He goes, are you okay with that? I was like, yeah. I was like, are you okay if I pray here in the kitchen? He goes, yeah, of course. So literally, he just goes into his living room, puts out his rug, and he's praying. And the whole time, I'm just sitting in his kitchen, sipping on tea, just praying for his salvation, the whole, and for his family the whole time. Then he comes back, and it was like, oh, yeah, we can both pray together, and that's cool. So, yeah. And that, man, that, I still have a relationship with that guy many years later. And it opened up so much. So many good, not just conversations, but just the atmosphere. It was like, oh, we can respect each other and both pray in the same place. I don't have to be afraid of you. No, you don't. Okay. And then open up lots of conversations that may not have even happened if it hadn't have just been for that.
And I mean, the overwhelming majority of the people within Islam, really, I mean, they're just loving people. They really care about good works. It's all part of what they do. They find prayer super important, things like this. And I think you can use that a lot to build these relationships and talk to them. Just kind of connect a few of the thoughts you've said, though, just to make it clear for the audience here. Let's say you did the research, okay, and you because there's these people groups that you're mentioning all across the country, just
Oh,
everywhere.
yeah.
That's amazing. It's wonderful. And so you've done your research and you figured out, okay, there's these people, over here that they really need Christ. How do they get started? As in, like, do you just go knock on a door, say, hi, I'm 10 blocks away? Is how would you suggest going about that?
So I think it kind of depends, again, kind of depends on the context a bit, but here's some general things would be, one, depending on the time of year. So during the summertime, if you know that there's an apartment complex that or neighborhood that has a lot of people from an unreached people group, j there have been times we'll literally just either take a soccer ball or an ultimate frisbee, and we'll just go out and start playing and stuff, and just welcome people to come join you. And a lot of times it will. They'll kind of look at you like, oh, okay, I guess so. But they'll come join you, and then boom, you're building a relationship through some kind of like sports activity, and it's great. And then many times they'll even offer you, hey, what are you doing? Like, oh, like maybe we'll go get dinner or something. They're like, no, come to my house. Like, come to my house, get some tea. Come to my house, we'll have dinner and stuff. And so, right there, like the doors start opening. Or like I said, find out if there's a resettlement agency around you, whether it's World Relief or something else, and just reach out to them. Be like,
That might be a
hey,
really good starter
be a
way.
huge starter way, and you just let them know, dude, we want to welcome people into our community. We want to love them. We want to help them. How can I get involved? And unless it's a person I have never heard of before, they will tell you, oh, there are ways.
Yes, of
Oh,
course.
we will use you. Yeah.
Because there's never enough people to help. Never enough. And
Exactly.
so, yeah, of course, there's and it's simplistic. You don't have to be super talented or anything. I mean, you can be used. What do you think about if you mentioned, like, whole apartment complexes that are
Yeah.
full of people? What if you were to, like, make up, like, a little flyer and that says, hey, I'm from this church. Just gonna let you know that we love the such and such people, mm-hmm. and it's their own people. We'd love for you to come. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think that there's, is there enough knowledge of the English language that they can appreciate a church service and stuff? And so, what do you think?
Again, it kind of all depends. You know, depends on where the people are from, what they did for a living, you know, where their standing was in society, especially as far as English. Some people come over and they're fluent in English, you know, and they're like, hey, I was a medical doctor in Iraq. I've got an MD and a PhD in something else.
right.
Like super academic, like I've got this. Or you might have someone who literally grew up in a refugee camp. And before coming to your neighborhood, they had never left a 2x2 mile box, and they're 30, you know, and now they're like, I never learned English. I don't even have like a lot of the skills you need to hold down a basic job.
You don't know a trade or anything.
Don't know a trade. Mm. So that's how wide the spectrum is, you know, of I was a leading person in, you know, politics in my nation. All this respect, all these things, all the way to, I've never even used electricity before. So you kind of just got to build that relationship, even just saying hi, you know, but I think even just simply saying hi to people, it makes
smile.
Them smile. Yeah. Smile more. But as far as, I think again, unfortunately for something like that, it would be kind of context driven, you know?
That's fair. Yeah.
But especially the relationships. And that's where, like I said, if you want to go that route, try the soccer ball or the frisbee, you know, and just see if you can go out there and just play with some people, make some friends. Because another way that a lot of these cultures are very different from America is if you become friends with one person, they will naturally network you to become friends with 40 more people. It's not like, unfortunately, in our culture now, we're so cloistered away. It's like, I could meet one person and never meet another one.
Very individualistic.
Very individualistic. And so that's one of the things, too, is once you find one person, they'll probably end up introducing you, especially because of the hunger so many people have. Hey, there's this American family. They actually love people and they're welcoming them.
Right.
And you'll suddenly find yourself with more to do than you'll have any idea
what
to do.
Now, so if you're same idea, kind of a little bit in reverse though, you're walking across, you see unreached people group, or at least you assume, close enough, and you look at them, they're all playing a game of soccer. Mm-hmm. Would you invite yourself to the game? Would you say, hey, can I join you?
Right. A lot of times you can. You're just like, hey, you know, hey, can I jump in and stuff? And many times they'll say, yeah, you know, like, dude, do it. You know, especially if they're just out there having fun, you know, and hey, can I join you guys? And a lot of times they'll say, yeah, you know, and it's kind of like the worst they can even do is just say no, you know, but usually there'll be at least one person who speaks really good English. You might see 11 people defer to one guy and he's like, yeah, do it. And then he looks at everyone else and they're like,
big thumbs
right,
up there.
We're good. Yeah, we're good.
That's really awesome. Okay. I think we learned a lot here. And I think that one of the big takeaways that I have is if I was totally unsure, I'm going to go to, was it World Relief?
Yeah, World Relief is a really good one.
And a good starting point.
Good starting point.
To them, and they can fill you in the rest, do some research, use things like Joshua Project and things to figure it all out, and just love people.
Yeah.
Simple as that, just love people. And go for the long term. You know, sometimes some people get into this idea of, I need to convert someone, and that's really not even biblical. Mm-hmm. That's not the idea at all. The idea is you're loving people, and if you really do love someone, you care about their spiritual reality, you care about their spiritual end, and that's just a part of loving that person. And so, you know, you don't get to a point where you're thinking, they're never going to respond, so you go to the next. You don't ever do that.
Yeah.
You stick with this person because you love them. Mm-hmm. And if you have trouble with that in your heart, I'd say pray about it and have the Lord fill you with the love that you need to represent him the best.
Yeah. Yeah, another thing, this is kind of a
like we're kind of in the closing thought section now, so go ahead.
So we're in the closing thought too. I would say, as you do that, also just be aware of the fact that the one thing, especially if you've never been in this kind of orbit of a ministry before, is there is such an unending need in this world for, especially with refugee care, that you have to also have good discipline for self-care, to avoid burning out or to avoid, suddenly your family and everything in the world is taking a back seat, because there is truly such a need that we can never fill. There will always be another thing you can do. Yeah. There will always be one more thing. And so, just gauging with yourself, like, hey, do I even need to, let your pastor know, because it'd be great to get your whole church involved. Yeah. But even just to let your pastor know, like, hey, like, this is something I really want to do. Can you just help hold me accountable to make sure, and if I start losing my mind, can you just help me, and be that accountability partner? So, because I've seen some people who do, they'll get into it, but then it becomes, I now have to fix everything. And there are a lot of things that you just can never fix.
Right.
And that's where a lot of, like I said, listening sometimes. You just have to, you listen, you pray, you love, and you do what you can, but you've got to be able to give yourself a lot of grace.
You know, that's really good advice. And I think it's good for everyone in every context. Because if anybody that starts getting involved in ministry of any kind, a lot of people, they have other jobs. They're not occupationally in ministry, perhaps. We should all be full-time ministry, right? But not, maybe not occupationally. And so it is easy to get burnt out on that. And so we always need to be discipling and being discipled.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully there's that person, or maybe, like you said, rope in even someone extra specifically for this. I want to avoid burnout, which is a real problem, especially, I think, in America. We do tend to go, burn, and even sacrificing family, friends in the process. So I really appreciate that.
The one scripture I would say, too, with it, this is something that me, my wife, is really has impacted us in a number of and helped us also self-check a bit too. One of the nice things too is sometimes you and your spouse, if you're doing this like as a family, is you're also able to check each other. But one passage, and this is echoed multiple times in the Psalms, prophets, Jesus repeats it, but the first time we see it show up is in 1 Samuel with Saul, when Saul is told to destroy, I think it's the Amalekites, and he doesn't, and he says, I'm going to sacrifice these things to the Lord. And Samuel has this beautiful phrase that, clearly the Lord just inspired Samuel, and he said, no, obedience is better than sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think, again, with any kind of ministry, but with specifically with this kind too, but it's not limited to this, is recognizing so many, I think, especially in our American context, and this is not to go into a commentary of missiology over the last century or anything, but even I think especially within that context of different missions groups and things that become popular, and there's almost this guilt trip of how much are you sacrificing?
Mm.
When really what the Lord's asking is, are you being obedient? And it takes away our self-righteousness. Because many times we can fall into this self-righteous trap of, I need to make sure I'm sacrificing more than the next guy because that's going to make God happy.
Yeah.
When in reality, many times he's like, no, you actually need to throttle back a little, buddy, because you're starting to lose your kids, your wife's going crazy, you haven't even taken care of yourself for the last year. And it's like, oh, wow, okay. And so having that recognition of, it's not about how much you sacrifice. It's about how obedient you are to the Lord. Mm. And I think sometimes if we would reflect on that, I think there's a lot of marriages that would still be intact.
Yeah.
I agree. That no longer are. So
success is being faithful to the person and word of God.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of that is loving your spouse, loving your kids, taking care of them. And if you do hit a wall where you're burnt out, and I've been there, unfortunately, still learning.
Oh yeah.
But you know, it turns out you need a certain amount of sleep, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, when you do, then how good are you? You know, you're completely useless then for the next, you know, if depends on how bad you hit the wall, you know, it could be a week or so. And then you're really dropping the ball real hard, which then makes you feel more guilty and ashamed, which increases problems, and it can be, you know, compounding and circular. And so it is so valuable to just take the time to sharpen the axe to cut down more trees. You know, yeah. You don't want to be trying to hit that tree with a dull blade. You know, maybe you'll eventually knock it down, but there's far better ways. So. Well, I appreciate your time, my friend.
Yeah, and, thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
It's been good, and so we'll, you know, they'll never know who you are, but we'll keep in touch, and we'll maybe do some things together some other time.
That'd be awesome. Good. Sounds good.